you've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Purdue playing at Oregon in Matthew Knight Arena this weekend. We had Nathan Biddle on the show today. Oregon big guy. Seven-footer. Purdue's good. There's no Zach Edey, but they're good. Jerry Palm, our next guest, CBS Sports. He is also a Purdue guy, and he knows Purdue basketball. Before we get into the CBS Sports stuff, Jerry Palm, what's Purdue, what's the scout against Oregon in basketball this weekend?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not really sure what the scout is against Oregon, but I can tell you what the scout is for Oregon.
Yeah,
against
do it.
Purdue. Everything starts and ends with Braden Smith. That is the head of the beast, and nobody has really been able to contain him and keep him from doing what he likes to do. Drake Hoffman's the leading scorer, 6'9 post, very different than what Purdue had in the post last year, although Trey played quite a bit. But it was, he's Purdue's leading scorer, but it's really a three-man operation. Smith, Kaufman, Wren, and Fletcher Lawyer are going to be the primary scorers. They can play inside and out. About five games ago, Painter changed the starting lineup, added senior Caleb First, who's 6'10", on the front line, and also freshman guard C.J. Cox from Massachusetts, our Purdue accidental recruit. And that lineup has really sparked this run of successful play for Purdue. They defend very well. They rebound really well, and they shoot very well, especially from three. So they're a handful. But if you can get Braden Smith off his game, Purdue's game will follow.
These Pac-12 teams that moved into the league, Oregon obviously has played well. A lot of people had high expectations for UCLA. Hasn't really been there. The coach appears to hate his team. What has been the kind of the reaction in the Big Ten for Oregon and these new teams that have come in?
Well, I think for fans, it feels like, they're just chasing money, right? You've got these teams out there that we have no geographic relationship with. The travel's a mess for everybody. I think Mick Cronin's complaining about that this week, but you can imagine for the non-revenue sports, it's even a bigger mess, and scheduling is a nightmare. And, it has nothing to do with the schools themselves, because they're great schools and they have great athletic programs, and, they're good to have as members of the league. It would just be nice if they were to eat the mountain time zone, so that
right.
For everybody's concern, it's the travel just unwieldy. And, we used to have a relationship with the Pac-12, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, long time relationship, on and off the court. And, the Big Ten actually, was put the final dagger in the Pac-12. So it's kind of, I feel irritated about that.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, is with us. In basketball, the selection committee's got net rankings. Football, we don't have anything like that. And my buddy John Wilner talked a little bit with Ken Pomeroy, and, you're in that world as well. And I'd love to get your take on that. The CFP selection process, is there a way to get a version of the net rankings used in football, or is that far-fetched?
Well, I don't know about far-fetched, but it's hard to be as good as it can be in basketball, because you have a third of the teams playing about a third of the games, maybe even less than a third, because almost everybody plays an FCS game, which wouldn't really count in something like that, because you don't have enough games, even though there's 100 of them. It's not really still connected enough between FCS and FBS to really do like full rankings of both. Now, obviously, there are people out there that do rankings. Sagarin does them, and they used to use four computer rankings, or it's actually six, but there are four of those are left as part of the BCS formula. So they exist, I just think it's hard to be, you know, really accurate with the relatively few number of teams playing relatively few number of games.
If you took, if you eliminated any games against FCS and you said, we're only going to have 48 teams be in this pool of play, does that help? Could you come up with something?
No, I think now you're even limiting it more, right? With 48 teams.
Yeah,
that's limits it even more. The smaller the pool you make, the harder it is to do anything that's meaningful. So if anything, you need to expand pool. But it's just, it's hard, and you don't want rankings making decisions. That was one of the problems with the BCS. You don't want rankings making decisions, especially in football, because, well, first of all, you can't account for things that are not measurable, which the committee does need to account for that. But in football, like, if you look at football rankings, if you look at just the ones that are still left from the BCS era, there's not a ton of agreement. You know, it's you'll see, you know, like KenPom and the Net are really close together. In fact, I say the NCAA actually designed the Net to try and mimic KenPom as best as it could without actually having his formula. Despite the fact that he told them that his rankings were not what they were trying to measure. but, no, anyways, that's a longer story. But it's just hard, I think, in football. But if you go out and look at football rankings, you'll see some stuff that's all over the map. Sagarin, Massey actually rank FBS and FCS together. Anderson Hester does not. West Colley does not. They each have to have a way to deal with those games, and that, you know, sometimes it's just a generic bad team. So it's just there's a lot of stuff you just have to try and accommodate that, you know, when you don't have a lot of teams, relatively speaking, and you don't have a lot of games being played, that whatever you have to do to accommodate, it can even throw things off even more. I would never want college football decided by computer rankings, ever. I mean, it's fine to have one to look at, you know, and the sports source analytics people have a team ranking that the committee may very well have as part of their package from them. So they may actually have a team ranking. We just don't get to see it. But they may or they may not. But I know that they have one, that sports source analytics, who provides the data to the committee, has a team ranking. I don't know if the committee's looking at it, and I wouldn't want them making decisions based on computer rankings. I wouldn't even want to have too serious of a discussion about it. Strength of schedule, you might be able to do, but even that, you know, you're still talking about the same set of data.
Let me ask you about that, because the SEC made a big deal about, hey, our strength of schedule, hey, our conference is great, there's no weeks off, Kentucky and Vanderbilt are great, and everybody's great. And, you know, if we're just having a bar stool conversation about strength of schedule, what would you tell me?
Well, it's kind of one of those eye of the beholder kinds of things. You know, Indiana's schedule, I think, was unquestionably bad, especially for a major conference team. But you only get, you get like 75, at least for the Big Ten teams, where you play 12 games and 9 conference games, 75% of your schedule is handed to you. And then you have 3 other games that you choose. And you choose them years in advance in football. It's not like basketball where you got half your non-conference schedule you're doing before the season starts. In football, it's like 3 or 4 years in advance. So Indiana had a bad non-conference schedule because they're bad at football until this year. So why should they schedule up? And then they get handed a Big Ten schedule that had defending champion Michigan on it, who had a down year, and a couple of the other teams on their schedule had years that were not as good as expected. So their schedule as a whole is really, in terms of major conference teams, one of the worst in recent memory, because of really Ohio State being the only, they got all the way to the end of the season before they even had a team that had qualified for a bowl on their schedule. It was late November by the time that happened. So, but what are you going to do about that? They went out and annihilated everybody they played except Ohio State and Michigan. That's all you can do, right? And so, you know, margin of victory kind of matters in this situation, because you have to dominate those teams, and that's what Indiana did. And that's really all you can do with your schedule. And then we'll see what happens next year. A lot of people are going to try to emulate what Cignetti did, you know, hire a coach from somewhere else, bring in a bunch of your players and go dominate. Well, you've got to get handed Indiana's schedule. So, you know, for Purdue, for example, they hired UNLV's coach, Barry Odom, and he's bringing a bunch of players with him, and there's going to be a bunch of transfers at Purdue because when you have a new coach, especially from a team that wasn't good, there's a ton of roster turnover. But they still have to play basically the same Purdue schedule as last year, except home games are on the road and road games are at home. So they're going to get Ohio State. They're going to get Penn State. They're going to get Notre Dame again. They're not getting any schedule. So, you know, Purdue is going to do something similar, but they're almost certainly not going 11-1.
Yeah, Washington State going and hiring the South Dakota State coach. He's bringing 15 of his guys. I said, that's Kurt Cignetti. Like, they're trying to replace that divot on the roster. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, Cignetti did not invent that. You know, coaches like to bring, you know, players that they have familiarity with them, you know, with them. He didn't invent that, but he was able to build a team that was much better than the schedule he was given and have a great year with it. But people have been trying to do that forever. I mean, you bring guys you're familiar with and hope you can make it work.
Jerry, the big question I have is, you know, I don't think it was helpful that the rankings came out week to week for a couple of months there, and pandering came with it, and I think there was a lot of noise. I get why ESPN wanted to do it, because it's part of their deal. They get, you know, they get an event every week with the rankings coming out. But Basketball Selection Committee does it one time, and then the noise is over. If they asked you what was best for the game, is the basketball model better or is the football model better?
Oh, basketball's definitely better, and it's better for the committee. Basketball now is doing it 1.25 times because they give you a top 16 about a month from selections. But it's an ESPN show, and you know, I'm sure it does great rankings. I never get to watch it, but because I'm too busy working at that time. But I don't think it's helpful. And, you know, one of the things that happened this year is that sometimes you see week-to-week inconsistencies. So at the second-to-last rankings, after Miami gets beat, and they put Alabama ahead of Miami, and they said, you know, Ward Manuel was talking about why, one of the things they said, well, you know, Miami didn't have quality wins. They had the one loss to Georgia Tech, which is not as good, and Alabama's got, like, three ranked wins. And so that's fine, you know, and then SMU the next week loses to Clemson, and SMU's resume is nearly identical to Miami's. They didn't have any ranked wins. Both of their losses were to ranked teams, so their losses were slightly better, and they had one more win because they played in a conference championship game. But everything they said about Alabama versus Miami, you could have said the same things about SMU, but SMU finished ahead of Alabama. So, you know, inconsistencies like that don't happen if you only put out one ranking.
Yeah, and I think it allows the committee to answer the question without feeling like they're getting, you know, every conference commissioner was out banging the drum, and I understand why, because once Brett Yormark went, Greg Sankey went, you know, here's Gloria Navarez, suddenly, you know, Tony Petitti, everybody's just pandering nonstop, and it just creates so much noise in the marketplace. It's almost like you can't sequester the jury.
Yeah, and I mean, I think pandering is, you know, part of the tradition of college football because of this kind of thing. And the SEC is the best at pandering. The other thing about this, though, is that you're out there, you know, every weekend, and I don't know, I think they start meeting on Friday, but they might even be out there on Thursday. And that's a grind, doing that every week. You know, I mean, those meetings are a grind. There's a reason why the basketball people only do that once, because that is a seriously taxing weekend physically and mentally. And they start on Wednesday, the basketball committee does. So, but they have a lot more work to do. So for the football committee, so to do that like 6 weeks in a row, 7 weeks in a row, it's, I would think, you know, a pretty taxing thing on the members of that committee.
Jerry Plum with us. Jerry, before I let you go, you know, the NCAA tournament, we've talked about expansion, or, you know, could they add another four teams, another eight teams? What do you expect to happen? And, you know, you got to keep the tournament within the footprint of that timing. You can't have it go on forever. Right. What's the right number in your mind, and what do you think they're going to do?
The right number is 64. That's the right number. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think they're going to add four mediocre teams to this tournament. That makes, by the way, the job for people like me harder, because that's you're trying to predict which four of those teams are going to be, and there's the further you go down, the more teams are similar. So there's going to be 10 to 12 teams that you could pick four from, and you could justify any four of them. So, and it's like maybe eight teams for the first four now. So the further down they go, but you know, if you want to just keep going, just make it like high school in a lot of places. Everybody's in, and take the, I don't know, the expansion. You're expanding, and the excuse is, well, we've got so many more teams now in Division I. Well, you're not expanding for any of those teams, because those are all small schools, you know.
Right.
Joining the Northeast Conference and the Sun Belt and whatever, and you're not taking any more of those teams. You're taking Syracuse, who can't beat anybody, or you're taking Virginia Tech. I don't mean to pick on the ACC, but you know that's the teams you're taking. You're going to take teams that are two games or four games below 500 in their league, because you want some bigger names in the tournament. And I don't know. It's a waste.
Yeah, I think the commissioners want to tell their members, "Hey, we're getting more of you in, even though we've got 18 members."
I'm sure there's a little more money in it too.
Yep, you know, for sure.
But you're splitting the money 72 ways now instead of 68.
Yep. Jerry Plum, you're the best, man. Thank you. You can find him on Twitter, Jerry Plum, and CBS Sports. Jerry, thank you, man.
All right, thanks.
There he goes. He crunches such things. He noodles on it. I loved his answer. What's the right number of teams? Steven, you had to nod your head. He said 64.
I laughed because it's hilarious, because he's so right. That is the right number, but we're not even at that, and we'll never get back to that. So if they are going to add teams, I hope it's what he said. I hope it's just four extra teams and leave it at that. Don't make this thing too big. It's going to water it down.
Well, they're also trying to get their hands on the thing. And when I say they, I mean the Power Four conference commissioners want governance of all of the NCAA championship events. That's the idea that they've floated out there. And they don't want it because they go, oh, we want to run these events. No, they want control over access to the events. And so what they want to do is Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti and company, they want to come in and they want to go, hey, we're going to take over running the basketball tournament now. We want to add, eight more teams. And because we have 16 and 18 members, we need more of our members to get in this thing. We can't, we can't take away opportunities from our teams, and it doesn't make the tournament better. No, there's nothing wrong with the NCAA tournament. There's nothing wrong with it at 64 teams. Leave it here. Some parting thoughts coming up.